Right, let's go to Darcy now. We're going to change tact a little bit, but we need to talk about stuff like this, especially when we're on lockdown. Amazon woman facing fears, chasing dreams, a quest to kayak the world's largest river. Good afternoon to you, Darcy. How are you?
I'm doing good, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, whereabouts are you, Darcy, if you don't mind me asking?
I am in Colorado right now.
Oh. Now, you see, what's it like there at the moment for you guys? Is there a lockdown in place?
There is a stay-at-home order, so not exactly a lockdown, but they've asked everyone to stay at home except for essential activities. But in Colorado, essential activities include recreation, though they're asking you not to travel to recreate, but you can go hiking, yeah, you know, or walk the dog. Also let you go to the liquor store and the pot shops because those are also essential in Colorado. of course, the grocery store.
Now, in Colorado, is it essential then that most people in Colorado, because this is the view I've got from my British mentality or living in Spain, that a lot of people in Colorado like doing outdoor stuff. A lot of outdoorsy people move to Colorado.
Yes, that is true. And they've actually, you know, because they are still allowing recreation, they've had some problems, you know, like all the ski areas shut down, but then everybody started going backcountry skiing and they would all kind of congregate in certain areas. So they ended up, like the Forest Service ended up shutting down, yeah, even some backcountry areas. They've shut down some river access points just because there's kind of too many people trying to do stuff, but they're still allowing you to ride your bike or hike or walk as long as you aren't with big groups, as long as you don't, you know, travel. I'm not sure their limitations, but not more than a half an hour driving or something like that.
Yeah, wow. And so this book is fantastic because I think for a lot of us that are on lockdown, we're thinking about what are we going to do when we're able to move. In Spain, as you can, you may have heard, but the lockdown is far stricter here than it is in the US. And so we're sitting at home, climbing the walls, watching YouTube videos, or maybe reading books like yours, thinking, oh, to get out there and do something fun outside or go swimming in the sea or whatever. Where did this idea come from, Darcy, for the 148-day journey? Where did it all start for you on the Amazon?
Well, it was actually not my idea originally, but it's a cool story, the backstory of it. The idea came from a guy named David Midgley, who lives in London, and he is a brilliant computer programmer. But he kind of was having a midlife crisis, I guess you would call it. And he thought to myself, I don't want to spend my entire life writing code behind a computer. I need to do one big adventure and that will sort of complete my life. So he started looking through the adventure archives and he read that more people had walked on the moon than had descended the Amazon from source to sea.
Wow.
And everybody else who had gone down the Amazon had either hiked around or rafted the roughly 400 miles of whitewater. So he decided that he would kayak the Amazon from source to sea, and that would be his one big adventure in his life. But when he decided that, he was about 33 years old, and he had never kayaked before. He had never gone camping before. And he really, you know, was not an athlete at all. But he, what's kind of so amazing about this story for me is that he just set his mind to this expedition and he trained for about 10 years and he needed to become a class 5 kayaker. And for people that aren't whitewater people, the ratings go from class 1, which is the easiest, to class 6. And class 6 typically means that something is unrunnable. And wow, so class 5 is the hardest runnable classification of whitewater. So David Midgley, trained for a decade to become a class 5 kayaker. And the reason I got involved in this project is me and my boyfriend own a whitewater guiding company in Ecuador called Small World Adventures.
Yeah.
And David started coming to Ecuador to train with us because he had heard about our reputation and we train, you know, everyone from beginners up to class 5 kayakers. And so he thought this would be perfect. So he came sometimes for only 2 weeks, sometimes for as long as 2 months every winter until eventually he felt like he was good enough to do it. And then he invited Don and I to go with him to help him.
Wow. Was it pretty daunting, the whole idea of doing this on the run up to it?
You know, I sort of have a rosy outlook of challenges. And I, whenever I'm posed with a challenge, I always immediately say yes, and I don't think it through very well. And so that was kind of the case with the Amazon. I just thought, yes, let's do this. And Don, my partner, who's much more practical and thoughtful, he was like, hold on just a minute now. Are you sure this is going to be like a 6-month commitment? All this stuff. And but I still, once the idea got put into my head, I thought this was a really good opportunity to do something that no woman had ever done before, that, you know, no people had ever done before, if we were able to kayak the whole thing. And yeah, I was pretty excited about the whole thing. But what I did learn, you know, I just thought to myself, oh, I've been kayaking almost 20 years. I'm in good shape. I am ready for this expedition. But I didn't consider like the mental or emotional preparations that I should have done. And that was definitely my weak point on the expedition. I physically had no problems, but the mental aspect of it for me was very challenging.
But is it almost a little bit like a blessing in disguise, because you have this outlook that, oh, let's just go and do it. And again, that can cause a lot of problems. But also, you are a yes person. You will give something a go rather than kind of back out after thinking too much.
Yeah, I definitely feel fortunate in that regard, because I don't have a lot of hesitation. If some idea sounds good to me, I just say yes. And then I often get in a bit of trouble as I, you know, sort through the realities of what my saying yes has caused. But I also don't mind suffering a fair amount. So I think those two things are kind of a perfect combination. I say yes, so I get myself into these situations. And once I'm there, I accept responsibility for putting myself there and say, okay, now I need to suffer through and figure out how to make this work.
Yeah. Now, some of the interesting things which people can read about in the book, but we'll maybe pick up one or two here. You came across some illegal loggers. Is that a major issue in that part of the world?
It is a major issue. So we spent about 30 days in a part of the river that Peru calls the red zone. And this is after the whitewater's over, but it's a pretty dangerous and volatile area. There's still Shining Path remnants there, which was like a rebel insurgent group in Peru. And there's a huge drug trade there now. Like in 2013, I think Peru overtook Colombia as the number one cocaine producing country in the world.
Yeah.
And then you have this illegal logging, and there's a lot of good wood there. They have mahogany there, which is very valuable. And I'm not sure what the situation is like today, but when we were there in 2013, the kind of watchdog groups that were looking over this area said that 80% of the wood coming out of that region was harvested illegally. And it's a huge problem for the indigenous groups there, because a lot of it's happening on their land and they're, you know, pretty powerless to do anything about it. And a couple of years after our expedition, there had been sort of an indigenous leader who was speaking out against the illegal loggers, and the loggers came into his village and shot him in front of the entire village, kind of as a warning to anybody else who might want to argue against what they were doing. And there's just so little police presence in this area, and it's hard to control anything. And it really is a sad situation for the indigenous folks that live there.
Yeah. And also,
and of course, it's only going to get worse now with the current president in Brazil.
Right. And I mean, you came across ruthless poachers as well. Did this trip open your mind up to other things that you probably never even thought would cross your path?
Yeah, definitely. And one of, you know, the things I'm most thankful for from this expedition, one of the bigger indigenous groups in the red zone is called the Shanika people. And just in my research about other Amazon expeditions and stuff, the Shanika are made out to sound like really mean, scary, horrible people. And they have murdered people in recent times. But, you know, during the expedition, I really learned that, you know, they're just trying to protect themselves. And they have like insane amounts of threats, including from their own government, who wants to come build dams on their river, from, like I said, the loggers, the narco traffickers, the Shining Path people. And so basically anyone who's ever come into their territory wants to take something from them or kill them. And I really feel thankful that I got to spend some time with these people, because they are incredibly kind. You know, once they realized that we were not a threat to them, they, you know, opened up their villages to us, said we could camp there, offered to give us whatever we needed. And, you know, from hearing so many horrible things about a group of people and then being able to see the reality was an experience I'm very thankful for.
Absolutely. What about the physical toll on you? We talked about the emotional side of it, but what about the physical toll? Physically, was your body worn out after this?
It definitely was worn out. And so David Midgley was, we would kind of go at his pace because he was, you know, quote, the weak link, physically speaking, in the group. And so it didn't feel overly hard to sort of keep up. And once we got to the flat water, he only wanted to paddle 6 hours a day because he was worried about tendonitis, which is all totally reasonable.
Yeah.
But so in the kind of paddling sense, it wasn't like, oh, I can't take another paddle stroke. But what did wear all of us down was, you know, day after day being in the sun for 12 hours a day, you know, every minute that the sun was up, we were out in it and we got, you know, horrible sunburns. Our fingers sort of got irradiated, I think, from the UV rays reflecting off the water and hitting our fingernails, which were pointing down. Wow. And being wet all the time. So, you know, like any cuts you have or something don't heal very quickly because they're always wet and always soggy. And, you know, even though we took baths in the river every single day, the water is really muddy. So you're always just kind of left with this film of mud on you. And those sorts of things definitely wore us down. And we sort of made a pact with each other. I'm a vegan, so I wasn't included in this pact, but Don and Midge forbid each other to say the word hamburger because they didn't want to start thinking about that. We couldn't talk about like beds or pillows or any of the things that we really were missing at that point.
Yeah, well, I know how that feels like at the moment, actually. But anyway, missing some missing hamburgers, whatever. Now, also, I mean, you make the point as well, and it's in the title, Amazon Woman, that you want to encourage people to go and do these incredible feats, especially women. Is that something that's a passion of yours?
Yeah, it definitely is a passion of mine. And I'm coming from a place, you know, I'm 5'4" and 120 pounds and a vegan. And so when people just look at me, they definitely don't think that I'm capable of doing any physical challenges and or anything like that. And as I was launching this book, I was doing a little bit of a speaking tour before the coronavirus hit. And one guy came up to me beforehand and said, wait, are you the presenter? Because you don't look big enough to kayak the Amazon. And I was kind of like, well, I don't think you have to be very big. But anyway, you know, like my whole life, I've always liked to do sports and do things that men usually do. So I've constantly heard this my whole life. And I, you know, back to the just saying yes thing, I feel really fortunate that I didn't listen to all these people, and something in my brain, when people told me that I couldn't do something, it would just harden my resolve to do it and prove them wrong.
Yeah, I'll show
you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So have you got
any ideas?
Go on. Carry on.
Oh, sorry. I just see so often young women listening to all the people telling them they can't or they shouldn't do things. And so my message, I just, like, it is possible, you know, you might have to work harder, but try as hard as you can not to listen to these people telling you can't do what you want to do.
Or let them drive you on to do it. Say, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to kayak the Amazon River. Right. I think
exactly.
That's enough for me to be thinking about. And what's your idea for the next thing? Have you got something on your mind that you want to do again somewhere else?
Yeah, I do. This writing and publishing this book was a totally epic adventure in its own right for me because it was totally out of my wheelhouse. So I was pretty consumed with that project. But now that it's done, Don and I are planning two projects. And my idea, there's a place in northern British Columbia called the Sacred Plateau. And there's three separate rivers that come off this place. And none of them are super long. They're maybe about 500 miles each. But to do a source to sea, because it's pretty close to the ocean. So source to sea on all three of these rivers. And the big appeal to me is that this is the part of the world that is, there's not many people. Again, there's a great group of indigenous people there that are fighting their land, and they're fighting from some mining, big mining interest in Canada. And I just really like the idea of checking out of society for extended periods of time. And so to me, this is the next great place to do that.
You know what, as well? I like the fact that you just said it's not a very long one. It's only 500 miles. Thank you for coming. Darcy, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Yeah. I appreciate it.
That's fine. And listen, I'm really, Colorado's on my to-do list because I really love the Colorado. I love John Denver as well. But it's just, it's one of those places I want to do. I've done California many years ago, but Colorado definitely. What do you like? Do you like Colorado? Assuming you do.
I love Colorado. I grew up here, and so it's home to me. And the mountains here are beautiful. It's pretty. I've lived in mountain towns my whole life, so I always had relatively easy access to go to great places to go hiking. The Rocky Mountains are beautiful, and you can get in some great wilderness areas. And in general, the people here are really friendly, so you should definitely come when we're allowed to travel again.
Yeah. Does everybody listen to Rocky Mountain High by John Denver, or is that just a myth?
Well, so it's funny. I grew up in Aspen, and John Denver was one of my high school friend's godfathers. And so we all listened to Rocky Mountain High all the time. And he used to do free concerts in the summertime for local people. And so, yes, the people in my circle all listen to John Denver. But I definitely get a lot of a hard time from some friends when I turn on the iPod and put on John Denver. Oh, they're like, oh, what is this crap? I'm like, come on, it's John Denver.
Listen. Do not. This is like the woman rising up again, isn't it? Nobody will tell me that I can't listen to John Denver. And good on you, because exactly. I love John Denver. Carry on listening to John Denver. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming on, Darcy. I'm going to play now Rocky Mountain High, just for all the friends that don't
all
like
right.
it. Thank you, Darcy. Bye bye. Bye bye.
All right.
Seventh year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road, but the string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast, and it don't last for long. If the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. The shadow from the starlight is softer than a lullaby. Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
He climbed cathedral mountains, he saw silver clouds below. He saw everything as far as you can see. And they say that he got crazy once, and he tried to touch the sun. And he lost a friend but kept a memory. Now he walks in quiet solitude, the forests and the streams, seeking grace in every step he takes. His side is turned inside himself to try and understand the serenity of a clear blue mountain lake. Of a simple thing cannot comprehend. While they try to tear the mountain